and welcome to Tech Access Weekly, a podcast of unspecified length concerning news and events in accessible technology. This is episode 23 for January 25th, 2010, The Vominator. And hello, everyone. Isn't it a wonderful day? It's already our 23rd episode.
23rd episode, and it's 65 degrees outside. It just doesn't make any sense for mid-January.
No, not here in North Carolina.
I guess it's technically the end of January.
Mm-hmm. Well, we've got a whole bunch of stories to cover, as well as something I know many of you look forward to, a what-were-they-thinking moment at the end of the podcast. So let's move it right along.
Well, in the news recently, you had the big discussion about Google and the Chinese arguing over data security and everything. And Microsoft, in a quick response, patched a hole in Internet Explorer on Thursday, I guess it was the 21st of January, as opposed to holding off for it until Patch Tuesday in 2 weeks. This hole is apparently what allowed the Chinese to hack into Google. No real description of what the hack is, but they did make the quick effort to patch it. So I guess technically Microsoft was guilty of helping the Chinese offend Google.
And the Chinese say they didn't do it, by the way. The government, anyway.
Yeah, exactly.
It was not involved whatsoever. So I hear the question. I mean, I read it. The question was, did Microsoft know about this beforehand, and could they have done anything about it beforehand? Did you read anything about what was said about that?
Well, right now it is thought that Microsoft did actually know about the hole, just hadn't fixed it yet.
Oh, okay.
They also have another hole which actually has been around for almost 17, 18 years.
17 years?
Yeah, in Microsoft Windows, since the beginning, there has been a security hack where a coder could actually inject his code into the kernel of Windows, which is basically the
meat.
Yeah, the meat, the heart and soul of Windows. But they've also corrected that as well.
Mm-hmm.
So everybody needs
took them long. Huh?
Yeah, so everybody needs to go out and make sure their Windows is up to date. Update your Internet Explorer as well.
When did they correct the kernel error? When did they do that? Was that this week too?
I believe it was this past week as well.
Mm-hmm.
If not, they may be holding on to that one for
Patch Tuesday.
Patch Tuesday. It really wasn't clear in a couple of different reports. One report said that it was actually already done. Mm-hmm. One report said, no, it hasn't been done yet. So I guess it's a little bit unclear at this point. The Google Chinese dispute caused Opera, Chrome, Firefox to actually gain in downloads because of people switching over from Internet Explorer.
Mm-hmm.
I can't remember whether it was France or Italy. One of those countries told all of their citizens to get off of Internet Explorer and actually download something else.
I think it was France. They told them to get off Internet Explorer and download. I think someone specifically said Firefox instead of IE.
So that's kind of an interesting thing where the government is actually getting against Microsoft for the crappy Internet Explorer browser, even though 7 and 8 are a lot better than 6, which is just dreadful. And speaking of Firefox,
yes,
Firefox 3.6 has come out as of the 21st also. Not sure if there was a correlation in there or not. But it's supposed to be a lot more stable, a little bit faster, better performance, allow you to have actual verified add-ons as opposed to plugins. They distinguish, I guess, between those.
What's the difference? Do you know? Because I read it and couldn't understand it. So.
Well, apparently they consider plugins things that people can put on their websites and other users can integrate into Firefox.
Mm.
Add-ons are actual things that Mozilla actually knows about.
Oh, I see.
That you can put on your Mozilla browser.
Mm-hmm. And they talked also about something that they're adding into it called personas, personae, whatever.
Yeah, I believe it's sort of kind of like X Marks, or I think there's even a persona plugin that you can get that allows you to create different personalities, mm-hmm. so that you could have one set of personalities for and links and everything for your personal, and then one for your business side. Mm-hmm. Or your porn searching, I guess.
Yeah, porn searching, like you've been doing lately.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
But
Tyler's Wood.
Yeah, Tyler's Wood. So it's sort of like maybe like a theme, like blogs have themes, but a little more detailed.
A way of
different links and everything.
I guess a way of just the viewing. Yeah, I guess a way of letting you have personalized settings. Mm-hmm. One thing that they did point out is that you can change the skin and the appearance of Firefox a lot easier now, so that you can cut down on what it looks like, mm-hmm. so that it loads a little bit faster and operates more stable.
Definitely need that. 3.5 has been slow as molasses for me.
Yeah, I haven't had much luck with that one either. But in other news, search engines have also followed suit with security updates. Mm-hmm. Microsoft has changed how Bing maintains IP addresses for when you are actually doing searches. I guess the standard out there is like 18 months for keeping searches and IP addresses associated with them. Since the Chinese hack, they decided to change Bing to 6 months, and then they'll purge the IP addresses off of the search criteria. And Microsoft has also modified Yahoo to purge IP addresses after 3 months.
Google, I think, is still keeping it at 9 months.
It's either 9 or 18. I'm not sure. Did they cut it to 9?
I think they did. I think they cut it to 9.
Okay. Because that's... I guess one reason that you would want it to be purged is the fact that, say, someone is going to commit a crime, that crime could actually be subpoenaed.
The search results related to the crime.
Yeah, the search results could be subpoenaed. Mm-hmm. You know, and this will get the search engines away from being liable for that. So if you're planning to commit a crime, choose your search engine wisely.
Yes, completely. And now I want to move on to other news about Google. The Nexus One phone, which runs the Android.
I haven't heard anything about that. What is it?
What, the Nexus One?
Just kidding.
Yeah, runs Android, and it's the Google's phone type of thing. It apparently will censor your profanity if you are using voice text recognition and you speak profanity into your Nexus One to try and voice text something. It will apparently censor it out and put number signs in there. Google is all up in arms about censorship, and then it does this thing with the profanity. And some Google executives were contacted about this and said it wasn't about the profanity necessarily, censoring it because it was profanity. It was that in transcripts and things, profanity could come in by accident because of the way the technology isn't all that great yet. So this is trying for that not to happen. This is their attempt for it not to come in by accident.
I mean, you could be sitting there doing a simple voice command or something, mm-hmm. or telling your grandmother that you enjoyed her package of fudge.
Yes.
And that package of fudge turned into something else.
Yes.
So I
guess in one way, it's a good thing to have, especially if you're on the other end and you get profanity from someone and you get offended by that. But I don't know. I kind of have a problem with it.
It's an issue more or less with voice recognition. Voice recognition isn't as good as it needs to be.
Right.
And you're just not going to be able to pick up on people's dialects. And I mean,
yeah.
if you look at the transcripts for a Google Voice or something, it's just horrible. You can't figure out what it's talking about sometimes.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's good that they're doing this, but hopefully when the technology gets better, they'll stop doing it. What I think they ought to do is to have some kind of setting in your phone somehow where you have the control over it. Do you want to turn it on or off?
Well, I guess you could override it by deleting it and then typing it in yourself.
Maybe that's what they're thinking.
I guess you could work around it that way.
Maybe that's what they're thinking. So, just kind of interesting. actually probably a good idea, even though I have a little trouble with it. In other Google news, the founders of Google, two gentlemen that founded Google all those years ago, are going to cede majority control of Google over to the other directors, basically. They are going to no longer be majority shareholders in Google by the year 2014. And this is their attempt. They want to diversify their investments and will have most of their assets in Google still, but will be diversifying among other things. So the way it is now, they together have a combined... together, they are about, they have control of the voting power. It's over 50%. And once they cede their shares, they'll have a lot less control in the 40 percentile range. The directors have most of the rest of it. The public has a very small say when it comes to voting rights in Google. They sent out a proxy statement several years ago, basically saying this is their strategy. The top dogs have most of the say, and the public has a very small say in the way that Google is going, even though the Google company is committed to the best user experience, I guess, possible. They don't give the public that much say in it, and it's still going to stay that way.
Well, a lot of companies diversify like that.
Mm-hmm.
Microsoft did the same thing. Dig.com, I believe, is well diversified with who owns stock and all that. So it's pretty common practice, I believe.
Yeah, but Google still has a real big... They're still going to have a real big share in it. It's not like they're going to completely go away.
Well, no. You don't want to run away from the cash cow.
No, definitely not.
But what is the web going to look like tomorrow?
Well, there's been several... predictions made over the past several years about what the web will look like. Tomorrow, it'll probably be pretty much the same. But several years from now, people have been looking at trends. And one of the trends is that the web will be accessible from anywhere. This means it's not going to be tied so much to a computer. You will be able to access all websites via computer, via mobile device, and you won't have one site for mobile and one site for computer. In other words, it'll all sort of combine, and you can access all the information from any device you wish. Also, the web will be more media-centric. Sites like YouTube and Hulu and all those other things where you can watch media and post your own media will become even more prolific and even more widespread. The third big trend, there's just four, but there are three main ones. Accessible from anywhere, very media-centered, and also social networking, sharing things with other people will be even greater. It won't be set just to sites like Facebook. There will be trends for other sites, I don't know what, but to branch out and create their own social networks too.
Probably something like Gowalla or Foursquare that you can get applications on your cell phones.
Yeah.
It's basically something where you can go and check into a restaurant or a business establishment and see who else is there based on their Foursquare accounts and things.
And it'll give you just essentially what they were saying is that you will be connected to everyone everywhere, and it will be more, not so much exchange of information, but there'll be a large social component to it as well.
Well, I think everything is kind of leaning towards the cloud, putting things in the cloud, having the Chrome OS, which is basically, from what I understand, just a browser where you start up the computer, it's automatically to a browser, you surf, you get two applications that way. So it's kind of leaning in that direction.
Everything becoming more and more cloud-based.
Media consumption will definitely be something that's changing as far as more television on the web, movies and things like that. a lot less in print media.
Yeah, definitely more in the Facebook and Twitter arena, even probably more blogs. I don't think they're going away anytime soon either. And a lot of, you know, podcast media as well.
Yeah, that's becoming more and more popular, especially video. A lot of different people are starting to do video podcast instead of audio. It seems to be a demand for that as people look for alternative programming than just their typical television viewing.
And this brings up a whole host of concerns. I mean, not least of which is privacy in the cloud. Things are becoming more and more public, but yet people are very much concerned about privacy and their private information. So there's that sort of balancing act you have to teeter on there.
Well, we've already seen Google had issues and Facebook has issues. Mm-hmm. Twitter has definite issues with their infrastructure that they have set up. So it's going to be interesting to see what happens. I mean, this year, there could be a major security breach or something that really brings the cloud environment to a forefront where people are like, I'm not really sure I want things up there.
Right. So that's kind of just a projection of where things are going. It's really not a surprise, at least to me.
But in trying to keep you more organized in your social media, Facebook is going to release a dashboard enhancement to their front page. When you log in, you would end up having a section on your page that would actually give you the opportunity to have things segregated, like those god-awful game posts and things, like if you're a major gamer or something on Farmville or Mafia Wars or something like that, all of the posts would actually go under a category as opposed to going into your general feed.
So that other people's feeds aren't cluttered up with your stuff and you're not cluttered up with other people's game scores and mess.
I mean, I created a separate account just to do some of that stuff just for the heck of it.
Mm-hmm. But now, I mean, those of you who have created those separate accounts, you won't need them because they'll be like, hopefully, I think they're going to call it a dashboard, like you said, to separate all that stuff. Has that actually come out yet, do you know, or is it something that's still in the works?
It's still in the works. They're estimating that it possibly could come out sometime in February. Mm-hmm. And actually, there may be a few people that already have it as far as beta testing.
Yeah, Facebook sometimes tends to trickle that stuff out.
Well, that's probably a good thing.
Yeah, probably a very good thing.
Get a little bit of a test environment going so that you can see what happens when you turn it loose.
Because I know when Facebook Lite came out, not everyone could get onto it immediately. Some of us could, and some of us had to wait.
Yeah, and it should help out as far as keeping up with people. There was a study released saying that you could only keep up with about 150 people on Facebook. You really had trouble if you were trying to keep up with more than that.
Yeah.
So there were actually reports of some people deleting people that they knew just because they said, I can't keep up with you because I'm over my 150 limit. So I wouldn't take it that literal.
Right. But it will definitely keep things more organized. And those people you know that do a lot of gaming and things, you can hopefully will be able to separate all that out so you won't even have to deal with it on a regular basis.
Yeah. Now, in terms of Facebook, one teen, a 15-year-old, Tess Chapin, took Facebook to an all-new direction. She was grounded by her parents for 5 weeks for reasons not disclosed in the article, but she went out to Facebook, created a fan page called 1000 for Tess to be ungrounded. So she put this out there, got well over 1,000 people to petition to have her become ungrounded. No reports on whether that actually worked or not, but it's kind of an amusing concept that might actually give teens a attempt at having a voice against their parents.
Oh, please.
If their parents can actually log into Facebook.
Yeah, well, no, it's not that. It's just, this kind of undermines parents' control a little bit. Not that, I mean, I don't know. If it's sort of like used as intimidation, it sounds like.
Well, I mean, hey, it's not any different than people getting on the phone and talking about their parents or getting in groups at school. It's kind of the same thing, just perfect strangers doing it instead of people you really know.
It'd be funny. I mean, you know, it would be interesting to know whether it was a like a contest. If she said, well, I'll get 1,000 signatures and you'll unground me, and her parents say, okay. Or if it was just, now I have 1,000 signatures, you have to,
yeah, I don't,
you have to,
I don't
stop
know.
Punishing me. You know?
Yeah, some of the quotes that they showed in the article were kind of funny. Like one girl that was 19 said, gee, must be nice to be grounded and actually have computer access. That's a concept my parents don't understand.
Yeah.
So it's kind of interesting.
Speaking of computer access on Earth, the astronauts in the International Space Station have computer access in space. Not only that, they have access to Twitter now. The International Space Station has, and I think has had for some time, laptop computers installed. And it's got some video conferencing and telephone if they need to contact their families for any reason. But what they haven't been able to do is get access to Twitter and actually have a Twitter feed from the International Space Station. A few days ago, one astronaut, Tim Creamer, who was on the space station, sent the first tweet from space. And I don't have the text of the tweet here, but it essentially was, this is the first tweet from outer space, and I know it had a smiley face emoticon in it, and at the end it said, send us your ? And I think his Twitter handle is AstroTJ or something like that?
Yeah, now NASA has several astronauts that do Twitter, and all of their handles start with Astro.
Mm-hmm.
Not quite sure why they would pick that. But
well, they're astronauts.
I know, but it just sounds goofy.
But if you searched for him, I'm sure you'd find his Twitter feed, Tim Creamer, C-R-E-A-M-E-R. Maybe it's Creamer. I don't know.
I guess the consumption of those tweets would possibly be of interest to the news reporters that are going to be sequestered.
Mm-hmm. Yes, there is a group of news reporters from French and Belgian and Canadian radio stations. There are 5 of them, and they have decided to start an experiment. They're going to spend 5 days in a house in the remote French countryside with nothing around them. They have no cell phones. They have computers, but the only access they have is to Facebook and Twitter. They don't have access to any other parts of the web. And their experiment is going to be, can they actually write worthwhile news using only Twitter and Facebook? And on the surface, you might say, well, sure, you can find out a lot of things on Twitter and Facebook. I mean, we find stories for this podcast through Twitter all the time. But you can find quotations, maybe a headline or two, but can you really create a backstory using just those two?
Well, it's possible. I mean, there's been a lot of information coming out of Haiti. There was, Israel had the big disputes last summer, and there was a lot of news coming out of that region, you know, over Twitter. And I believe there was even a YouTube video of a news commentator a couple weeks ago actually reading tweets.
Mm.
They were reading tweets. Mm-hmm. They had to bring in a person to sit at their table and read tweets that were interesting about celebrities.
Oh, goodness.
It was the craziest thing. So, they should be able to pull together some things. Mm-hmm. I think it would really come down to who are you going to follow?
Right.
If you're just following Joe Schmo out in the middle of nowhere, you're probably going to get a lot of, I had a ham sandwich today.
But, I mean, you could make a case for this. Sociologists have talked about the 6 degrees of separation where...
Wasn't that Kevin Bacon?
No. There's a theory that you're related to every person in the world by through an average of 6 people. So you can get to... I don't know. Theoretically, if I knew just the right people to go through, I could talk to the governor of North Carolina or the president of the United States by, on average, going through 6 people. But like you say, it's all in who you know. So if they are tweeting and have Facebook friends in the right places, they may be able to get a lot of things. If not, they might not. So they haven't gone into this experiment yet. They haven't started it. But they will be doing it soon, and they're going to report back when they've finished it to see how everything went and to see if they actually got any stories out of it.
Well, and two, it'd be interesting if they had to create new Twitter accounts and start from scratch.
Yeah.
I believe Twitter has actually revamped their suggested users list to where they actually have categories. So if you're interested in entertainment, you can select that. Or if you're into technology, you can select that category in order to get people that are using that.
In order to follow people who were,
yeah, exactly.
who were in that kind of arena.
Exactly. But I wonder how they came up with this idea to do this.
That's I don't know.
Crazy.
It is kind of nuts.
But I believe, I think it was a couple of years ago, they had a TV show with Martina McBride where they took actual general people from all over the United States and gave them the task of trying to get to meet Martina McBride.
Oh, that's right.
And they basically started in their hometown and they had to find someone in their hometown to get them a next connection to the next person, to the next person. And there was like 3 or 4 out of the 10 that actually were able to get the connections. Mm-hmm. And they never imagined that it would be possible to do that. So writing news articles, that shouldn't be too difficult.
Mm-hmm. 6 degrees.
Just write a lot about ham sandwiches.
Yeah. Well, Twitter is being used for these good experimental purposes, but it's also being used for some nefarious schemes as well.
Yes, in the British part of the world, there was a guy that actually did a fake bomb threat on Twitter, and he basically was arrested for terrorism. He's been suspended from his job. He's not able to go anywhere, and I believe he even had jail time based on his Twitter. He was just trying to be funny and be humorous, I guess. But
that backfired.
Yeah, just proves that people are taking terrorist comments seriously. But that was just sort of a bizarre story that was going on.
Mm-hmm.
Hadn't really seen that in many places, so thought we'd toss that out.
People have to protect themselves and understandably are taking this very seriously.
Very much so, but I think I would much rather protect myself with a vomit cannon.
Ah, yes, the Vominator. Actually, that's not what it's called. It's like some kind of laser ray gun or something. It has some kind of name. This company in Scotland is teaming up with a company in Finland, and they're trying to put together a cannon to help people in ships protect themselves from paparazzi and pirates and other scoundrel people. So what this cannon will do, I thought when I first started reading it that it was something like it would spew vomit or something. But actually what it does is make the people it's targeting vomit. It has some kind of laser beam that if people see it, will make them have tremendous vertigo and, I guess, lose their dinner. And it works up to a range of 4 kilometers, I believe it said. I don't think it's been, I mean, I don't think it's really in use yet, but it's something that's on the horizon, and they're looking to target celebrities who may need protection from paparazzi or other people who have yachts or boats or even potentially cargo ships. I don't know.
I can see it now. My name is Arnold. I am the Vominator. I am going to make you blow your chunks.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I don't know. That's just crazy.
That's just too weird. I mean, if you're looking at it and then all of a sudden, you know, you've got vertigo and you're tossing your cookies everywhere. Now, it doesn't seem like it would apply to blind paparazzi.
That's a valid point.
If you don't have light perception, it's not going to apply to you.
But I guess the problem with that theory is the fact that blind paparazzi wouldn't know who they're following.
Not necessarily. I don't know. Maybe, I mean, there are people who are blind photographers. And
would you really know that you were running down the street after Brad Pitt or somebody?
I don't know. Someone could set you up, and you just have to take your chances.
That's true.
Someone could set it up, and then you just have to take your chances because they'd be incapacitated.
I have the idea.
What?
Blind paparazzi. The real paparazzi hire them to stand in front of them.
Yes.
To block the rays of the vomit cannon.
Mm-hmm.
This could work.
It could work. It could.
Okay, we went off on a way out in the middle of a tangent somewhere.
I started it, and it just kind of went.
But let's try and bring ourselves back to reality with the powdery baggies.
Yeah, here we go. We're going to end with, what was he thinking? We should get a segue somehow, a theme or something. Anyway, what was he thinking, this TSA agent? A woman was flying on Northwest Airlines to Detroit, incidentally, the same airline in the same city with the underwear bomber. And a TSA agent jokingly confronted her with a baggie full of powder and asked her where she got it, making out like he took it out of her luggage and saw it in there. And she denied having any such thing. And about, I don't know, a minute later or so, he said, oh, it was only a joke. Ha ha. I'm so funny. But his supervisors weren't laughing because he no longer has a job with the TSA. Further proof that terrorist threats all over the world should be taken very, very seriously. And it looks like the TSA is doing just that.
I mean, that just leaves you to the thought of, okay, maybe television really is true with people trying to frame other people for crimes that they really
maybe
didn't commit.
But
I think there's a show in there somewhere.
But it does go to show you that TSA is taking the protection of Americans, insofar as it can, very seriously.
Yeah, and it fits right in there with the controversy over the body scanners that are going on,
mm-hmm.
Where people are worried about going through these large scanners that see literally everything. I can just kind of see the paparazzi wanting to get a hold of pictures of, like, celebrities going through. But it's kind of an interesting thing. There's talks that they're going to, like, block out portions of the body and things like that. But mm-hmm. then at the same time, isn't that kind of defeating the purpose? The underwear scanner. Bomber used his underwear. So mm-hmm. if you covered up that region, would you actually see it?
I don't know.
So travel worries.
Yes.
That's all we can
travel
say about
worries,
that.
Travel worries, and don't joke about it.
No, or you could lose your
job,
or your lunch if you were hit by
the Vominator. Yes. On that note, I've run out of stories to talk about.
Yes, and we've sent this down a rat hole that really needs to be exited.
Yeah, so we'll wrap up really quickly here by saying you can post comments or questions on our website, or you can email us. You can also follow us on Twitter at @TA_weekly. Or if you want to look at the stories that we considered covering for this podcast, you can go to delicious.com/techaccess/23.
23. Maybe we'll be here for a 24th.
I don't know. The way this episode went, people might not want us back.
Yeah, but I will toss out that Adam and Eve is offering a special introductory price of $19.95 for the wonderful video Tyler's Wood.
Oh, yes.
That we mentioned in last week's episode. Just in case people are wondering and looking for those stocking stuffers for Valentine's Day.
On that note.
That's a good note to leave on.
We'll hang it up right here.
Bye-bye.
Bye. To contact the team for Tech Access Weekly, send an email to techaccessweekly@gmail.com. Or you may leave a voice message at 260-2-ASK-TAW, 260-227-5829. Please visit our website at techaccessweekly.com.